Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, hello, happy Sunday. I am Joseph Kapsch, and you are watching Meet the Hollywood Press. Today, we are going to be diving into some hot Hollywood topics and controversies, backlash. We've got a little Scarlett casting backlash going on. We've got Bieber engaged, and we're going to be bringing it to you with a new panel of influencers, journalists, and, like, only they can bring you the perspective from on the ground in Hollywood. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce this week's panel. To my left, we have trans activist and media personality Ashley Marie Preston, who has her own podcast of her own, Shook with Ashley Marie Preston. She writes for Teen Vogue. She writes for Playboy. I'm sure there's many others. Yes. You might recognize her from her, I don't know, would you say famous or infamous viral run-ins with Tammy Lahren and Caitlyn Jenner?
All the above.
All the above. Welcome to the table. I really appreciate you coming
Thank
by.
Thank you for having me.
We have Samuel Braslow, who has written for 3.1 Venice Magazine, 429, also The Pride LA, and you cover a lot across intersection of culture, mm-hmm. politics, Hollywood.
Yeah.
And apparently, you only work for publications that have numbers in them.
Yeah, no, it's my thing.
Welcome to the table, Samuel.
Thank you so much for having me.
And then we have the esteemed Merle Ginsberg, who is a entertainment journalist and also covers culture. She has currently contributing to New York Post, Vogue. She has written for W Magazine, Rolling Stone, Daily Beast. The list goes on. Welcome to the table, Merle.
Thanks. I'm very excited to get into this with you guys.
Same here.
Smart people here.
Same here. So that being said, we're going to dive right in for our first topic of this week's show. And it's basically about Whitney Houston. And so to give a little background, Whitney Houston, a documentary by filmmaker Kevin MacDonald, hit theaters over the holiday week. And it's really what it's being positioned as is the one really in-depth documentary, because there's been a few. There's been like a Lifetime. There's been a couple different Whitney retrospective kind of movies since she's died. But they're saying this one was the only one that sort of got the cooperation and the inside look at really what went down that everyone or some fans are worrying about. What I want to discuss, however, though, is what this documentary revealed was that she suffered sexual abuse and allegedly at the hands of her cousin D.D. Warwick, and he's no longer living. And so, like, sort of the debate that I see raging between critics is like, is this look at her life trashing her legacy? Like, do we feel that her legacy as the voice, as one of the top female artists, is being trashed by these kind of revelations being brought to the forefront? Merle, I want you to start us off here, because I know you're familiar with Kevin MacDonald's work as a filmmaker.
Yeah, he's a very credible guy. He did The Last King of Scotland. He did an amazing Bob Marley documentary. I interviewed him. He was so thorough. You know, here's the thing. If Whitney Houston was this kind of sugary pop singer, which some people could say that she was for a while, then maybe it's not important to know these things, although I believe that the filmmaker's vision is the filmmaker's vision, and they should fulfill that in any way they want, even if they have no audience. Yeah. But given the way she died, given what we know, this new revelation helps explain a lot of her behavior, you know, with Bobby, and we know there was a lot of craziness throughout her life. So I think it is like sort of a missing key of why she behaved the way she did, and I think actually it completes a picture that was sort of fuzzy before.
Yeah. So, Ashley, what I want to ask, picking up with what Merle's saying, so the family cooperated, you know, with this, and Pat Euston is actually behind the documentary, her sister-in-law. And so recently we've had sort of biopics like the Versace story that was told on FX by Ryan Murphy, and you had where the Versace family 100% did not cooperate with it and did not want to give it a blessing. Mm-hmm. The Getty family, there's another docuseries on the Getty family that they're suing FX. Do you find it to be surprising that the Euston family themselves wanted this part of Whitney's story told after her death?
I think there are moments that become opportunistic. Many times we automatically subscribe to the idea that family is always cohesive. Yeah. And as someone who's not with everyone, right, in my family, like, I recognize that just because a family member came forward doesn't mean that it was always the right thing to do. But more than anything, I always question, who is this benefiting? Yeah. And if it were an opportunity to talk about sexual abuse, childhood sexual mm-hmm. abuse, family dynamics, the fact that it was actually a woman who sexually abused them, then make sure that it's benefiting an organization or a group that's focused toward preventing that from happening to other people.
So there was two interesting articles that stuck out to me on this, and that really kind of got me thinking that I wanted to discuss this. And so there was an article by Kevin Fallon in the Daily Beast where he literally said, Whitney Euston, the title, Whitney Euston Drugs and Sexual Abuse, Can We Just Stop Ruining Her Legacy? And then Kate Arthur over at the BuzzFeed, who also wrote an article that was like 7 Things You Need to Know, and she actually interviewed Kevin McDonald, who made the film. And what her takeaway, her one big takeaway, was that it left her still with questions about the relationship with her long-rumored, you know, lesbian partner, Robin Crawford. So we're not psychologists, obviously, and we're not going to diagnose what goes on in terms of, like, what happens to a person when they're sexually abused. But did you find that interesting that, like, out of everybody, Robin did not cooperate, like, she didn't do any interviews for
it. She was probably one of the few people that actually did care about Whitney's well-being and weren't as interested in the trauma porn, because America loves trauma porn.
Yeah.
And I think the way that I can't really speak on it because I haven't seen it yet, but what I will say is that many times it's not really about understanding Whitney, because there's this idea that, well, it explains her to us, but Whitney didn't owe anyone anything.
No.
There, and I think, once again, America, like, this idea that, like, well, she had to explain this to us, and it's like, no, she was her truest authentic self, and fans and those who respected her as an artist loved that most about her.
So, Merle, you actually had experience in your career, like, where you met her or you covered her.
I interviewed her for Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone. So, in your opinion, and this was going back, like, when she was at the height of, like, Bodyguard time.
Just starting to go there.
Just starting to go there.
Yeah.
And what did you find her to be? Sort of, give us your...
Well, you guys are probably going to be fairly offended by this, but I can only speak to my own experience.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think the filmmaker should say whatever he wants. And some other filmmaker can come along and do something different.
Yes.
But I found her, I don't know what substance she was on, if any, but she was completely out of her mind crazy.
Yeah.
The answers were incoherent.
Yeah.
She was kind of wobbling. And this is pretty early on. I asked her about, you know, it was a big moment in hip hop. I'm like, how does your music fit into this scenario?
Yeah.
And she was like, well, it's just time for Whitney. You know, there was no real... She wasn't,
was she wrong?
Well, you may be right about that. But she wasn't there, is what I'm saying.
Huh. So I'm going to switch here gears a little bit, Samuel. How much do you think, because obviously we know Hollywood loves a comeback, but mm-hmm. then they're just as equally, sometimes in different ways, responsible for contributing to the downfalls of sort of someone. How much then do you think the media contributes to sort of Whitney's troubled life in the press and so on and so forth? I mean, I felt like, I thought it was really craven of, like, the tabloid to actually mm-hmm. put a picture of her in her coffin, which you know, which makes it more sad that it's an insider that made that possible. So speak to that, of just how much you think the media contributes to all of these issues.
Completely. I mean, I think it gets to what Ashley was saying about trauma porn, that, you know, I mean, the media, just like Hollywood is a business, right? Yeah. And it's attached to narratives that drive sales.
Yeah.
And I think sensationalizing and focusing on the really tragic, highly personal elements of her life, I think that's what people wanted to hear, and that's what the media catered to. And I think it continues to do that, in the sense that this documentary also, it doesn't foreground her success or you know, it doesn't talk about her as an entire person.
Yes.
It focuses almost exclusively on these really awful, prurient details.
So we feel like it just sort of gives more of a window into, like, why. Sort of just why about everything, really, that we watched.
I mean, if she didn't have this kind of crazy, traumatic, up and down life, then it would be, why are you focusing on that? But that was a big part of the whole life and mystique.
I think this is where I can see it from the pure journalist in me. I absolutely get that Kevin did a great documentary, and then the fan human side of me is like, oh, can't we just talk about how she did Greatest Love of All and she was beautiful in her ball dresses? But I guess I see both sides of this.
Yeah, and I think also, again, really not shying away from the idea, what is the end game? What is it that McDonald hoped to accomplish by telling this story?
Yeah.
And I would like to think of it like, what would Whitney do? Like, if she were here and in a state of mind that she were comfortable sharing that, who would she want this to benefit? And she's actually said in interviews, she's actually talked about child abuse, how that was one of the things that she hated the most.
The most.
How someone who was responsible for a child's well-being could abuse that. So she was giving us clues, and I think she would want the kids to benefit. So my suggestion to McDonald is to kind of level that conversation, look for ways to mitigate that kind of harm from happening to other people. I think that's what she would have wanted.
Agreed. Well, there you have it. And we do recommend it, because it as a Whitney fan or not, even not, but just it gives you a really excellent view, and just with interviews that you hadn't seen before with her inner circle. But it's not going to be like the uplifting, maybe, like, film that you expect.
Does everything need to be that?
No, I guess it doesn't.
But it's not Disney.
But aren't we depressed enough?
Right.
We are.
We turn on the news to be depressed and anxious and anxiety-ridden. So, moving on from Whitney, the next topic of discussion, which I especially brought Ashley Marie in to speak on at least a large side of this argument, because basically Scarlett Johansson was cast in a movie with her director that she worked with in Ghost in a Shell, Rupert Sanders, who you may know because he had a history with... Kristen Stewart, which was interesting that he's attached to yet controversial stuff. You would think he'd want to fly under the... But anyway, I'm digressing. She is announced that she's going to star as Dante Tex Gill, a real-life figure who used a string of massage parlors as fronts for prostitution. And Gill was actually identified as a man, so it's a trans male character. And so, obviously, after Scarlett's casting became news... Twitter, the internet, LGBTQ community, so on. A lot of people had opinions about this, and it started these fierce debates online, prompting, which was very interesting, a very fast response from her publicist that pretty much was like, oh, go speak to the publicist of Felicity Huffman, Jared Leto, and why is the third?
Oh,
and Jeffrey Tambor for comment. And so I want you to start off, Ashley, here. What I basically, with the question to you is, what do you basically say to critics, you know, to critics of this in Hollywood media that say this is really a business and that this is not about sort of a social justice issue, you know, about visibility for one segment of the LGBT community? What do you say to that?
I think it most certainly is attached to social justice, because there is a social responsibility to the communities in which you borrow these narratives from. Mm-hmm. And one of the most disturbing things is that Scarlett Johansson is estimated at over $100 million, and she's stealing economic opportunities to thrive from a community that on a national average makes under $10,000 a year. And the question also goes to SAG-AFTRA, who I'm actually in the process of writing a letter to the president, because mm-hmm. they, in their theater agreement, only see protected class as over 40 years old, a woman over 40 years old, and disabilities. But race and gender identity is not a part of that conversation.
Is that a conversation that's being had, though, to be...
Yes, to be more, to basically update the language, it's a bit antiquated. And the when you're talking about California that has quota laws mm-hmm. on diversity, the entertainment industry, radio, film, and television seems to somehow evade those. Yeah. And when you bring it up, people feel they're beyond reproach. And so mm-hmm. I think that this is a larger conversation around how do we offer more economic opportunities for qualified actors and actresses who can play that role, and how do we also have accountability? I think what made the trans community more frustrated was the response.
Mm-hmm. Merle, so you obviously covering the Hollywood business for a while. Do you think that this is a conscious effort on the part when, like, the filmmakers were getting together and deciding they were going to do this story mm-hmm. and they're deciding who they're going to put in a movie? Is this a conscious decision, or is this something that they're not really thinking about it and they're just saying, I want to do this product, this project creatively, and Scarlett's who I want to work with? You know, give me your
Hollywood is not a business, the entertainment business, to benefit anybody but the money people. You know, it'd be, yes, there are socially conscious projects in Hollywood. That's great. I feel bad that trans actors can't get the work they want, but women over 50 can't get the work they want.
Yeah, we get no work, though.
Well, nobody guaranteed anybody in acting that they were ever going to have work.
Yeah. I think one of the best conversations that happened came from Sense8, Jamie Clayton, actress Jamie Clayton, who's trans, and yeah. Trace Lissette. And they were basically saying that this isn't just a thing of like, okay, Scarlett Johansson got this role. They don't even invite trans women into the same room as these women to audition for
these
roles.
And you know what? They don't invite women who are B-list into that room.
And so when do we change that? And I think that this is what I admire about the trans community. And I think that we're the ones to lead this conversation. Like, prime example, the fact that there's no language around race when Hollywood has a history of blackface, mammy, step and fetch it, all of these things. And that's why you have Scarlett Johansson last year playing Ghost in the Shell, playing a Japanese character.
But it's interesting you bring that up, because that was where that fell apart for me, to conflate those two. And I felt like people were already on the defensive because of the Ghost in the Shell. But Asian is a race. Trans is a gender.
You can't play Asian if you're not.
How can you conflate those two things?
Well, because they're both, you're talking about demographics that are underrepresented already. That's how they're related and tied together. So when you're talking about the Asian American community will tell you there is a lack of representation, which is why Fresh Off the Boat, when that show came,
absolutely.
It was such a hit, because there's already an underrepresentation. And so when people talk about the money, it is a money business. You can have household names, large names like Scarlett Johansson in these projects playing supportive roles and still get the outcome that you want. Black Panther was an example of that. It made box office history, and Angela Bassett, who's Hollywood royalty, was a supporting role in that, but she wasn't.
But Black Panther was the first black-centric superhero. Like, again, it's...
It was about
I feel
that.
Like we're conflating two things where it's
but
like...
But we're not, though. We're talking about underrepresentation in Hollywood and where we draw the
but
line.
But who in Hollywood said that the business of entertainment was about representation?
Well, that's the
I
thing.
I wish it was,
it's
but
typically
it's not.
About cis heteronormative white men who think that they know the experiences of women better than they do, who feel they know the experiences of trans people better than they do. If they were smart and if they were about their money, they would recognize that even in the LGBTQ LGBTQ community, we have an estimated spending power of $917 billion, which is nearly a trillion. So they would be smart about their money and do something that's actually going to engage the community that they're trying to market to.
Jeffrey Tambor is not a trans person, and
exactly.
yet he plays one.
No,
is that
not
a
anymore.
Bad thing?
He does not play. Well, not anymore.
Okay,
yeah.
That was because of yeah. sexual politics, but that had right. nothing to do with his gender.
Right, but the thing is that there were writers on that show who were trans.
I understand
there
that.
Were supporting roles that were trans. And so without these people at the table for the conversation, mm-hmm. he would have had no part.
Should Daniel Day-Lewis not have played in My Left Foot because he wasn't crippled?
Same thing. Yeah, and I think, once again, it goes back to the point where we can have these conversations in the beginning, but there needs to come a point where we evolve and we grow. So the conversation we were having when Hilary Swank played in Boys Don't Cry,
yes.
that was an entirely different time because we were still trying to figure out what that dynamic looked like in our community. But as we continue to do this, the objective should be to open the door so that we can step into those positions to tell our story better than we can.
But then trans people can also, like Janet Mock and other people, go make their own projects. Get out there, write your story.
And that's what we're actually working on doing. But the thing is, we're looking, you're talking about meritocracy, this idea that, oh, all you have to do is work hard and do this and you will get it. And the reality is that intersectional experiences teach us mm-hmm. that that's not the case. We don't have the resources
Nobody
to do so.
Nobody in Hollywood particularly, you want to be a banker, you'll have a guaranteed job. We're writers. We don't have guaranteed jobs. There's no guarantees.
It's not about guarantee, but it's about opportunity. And when we don't have that opportunity, that's when we need to have the discussion on how we include others.
So playing devil's advocate in this mm-hmm. conversation, because that was, you know, what even prompted me to ask you to be on the show was mm-hmm. you wrote a tweet that was very pointed about, like, white gay men not standing up for
right.
Stand up for us. You know, because basically that they were the same gay men that were okay watching Roseanne. Because my opinion on this is sort of...
Can we just
of,
actually say what the tweet was, just because...
Yes, go ahead.
So basically, I was talking about... This was about the Scarlett Johansson bit.
Yes.
And
yeah.
so what I was saying was that we have to stop making exceptions
yeah.
for which form of oppression and exclusion we're going to allow. And so it seems like sometimes, like, we're the same people that talk about wedding cakes and all of this and mm-hmm. oh, I want to have a right to, but then when it comes to trans women, more specifically trans women of color,
yeah.
we don't have that same conversation. There's not that same level of support. And so what my point was that we continue to make excuses for problematic behavior. They made excuses when RuPaul had the comments to say about trans women. They made the excuses when Roseanne had the problematic politics, not just around Trump, but around people of color, which later came out, and then everyone's all of a sudden on board. And now with Scarlett Johansson, some people were like, well, you know, she probably didn't mean it, but I think the conversation Rose McGowan and I had was a perfect blueprint and model of how you can hold someone accountable and hold them at the same time. And mm-hmm. the fact that there was there was this dismissive energy and there was no willingness to have a conversation,
yeah.
that was what the problem was.
She would get beaten to shit if she had that conversation. So I'm not defending her. Scarlett Johansson, not only that, she didn't choose to be in that movie.
Also, the interesting thing
is
the very dismissive PR comment, though. To my understanding, he is openly...
Marcel,
her publicist, is openly gay. So
exactly.
And here's the thing. I'm also gay. Big surprise, mm-hmm. breaking news now. but I really struggled with the argument here on behalf of the LGBT community because for years, and I'm going to just bear with me for a second here. Mm-hmm. For years, basically, the gay community was saying, you need to give the gay community a shot at playing straight roles, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So then how do we now confront this issue of saying trans roles in movies need to go to trans actors? Because then that basically puts us right back saying then Hollywood producers can say, well, if you're gay, you're not going to play a straight role. You're not going to be a straight leading man.
But that's not, and that's why I specifically love what Jamie Clayton of Sense8 on Netflix had to say. Her entire point was just that. if you're going to say that Scarlett Johansson mm-hmm. can do this, then you need to make sure that trans women are in that same room with Scarlett Johansson and Michelle Rodriguez and whoever else is playing.
They probably will be.
So your point is saying, you're saying beyond trans, just trans.
Exactly.
See, because a lot of the argument I'm seeing laid in the idea of just a trans character having to be played. That's where I didn't understand
there's a couple of different, as with anything else, always going to be different nuances to the conversation.
Yes.
But I think I definitely am specifically amplifying the one that Jamie Clayton had, which is that we need to look at the fact that it's not opportunities. So you say you can become anything, but we can't. We're not even invited out to those roles. And so my whole point and reaching out to SAG-AFTRA, who has a responsibility to performers, actors, and actresses, is to make sure that they are, that we are protected and that mm-hmm. we have equity there.
When you say not invited out, though, so like obviously acting...
Quite literally.
But I'm thinking of it in terms of like, and I know we can't take out the... We can't take out race, we can't take out gender identity, we can't take out sexual orientation because we live in a society that is a melting pot.
Right.
But if you just looked at it like, I'm a young boy that wants to be an actor and dreamed of being an actor, it is the most difficult career to break into for a straight person, a gay person, anybody. So when you're saying like you're not invited in the room, I don't know any actors who didn't just hustle, and it's like, getting representation, going to auditions?
We're going back to meritocracy. We need to stop pretending that the trans community has the same access. Even as a black trans woman, statistically, my life expectancy doesn't go beyond 35 years old.
Yeah.
We need to get honest. I am sick of white people, specifically in the industry, making excuses, and even with white women, the 53% who voted for Trump, making excuses and saying that like, oh, well, you know, all they have to do is this. And it's like, no, because we're being told like, oh, you can eat, but then there's a cage right in front of our faces and we can't access it.
So GLAAD did a study that you said, and it was literally like 84% of the people in America in their study said they don't know a person that is transgender.
And there was even another study that actually said that actually went deeper to ask them if they would befriend them, and it was shocking. Most people aren't even interested in getting to know
us. Those are the Trump voters. They are the people.
They're not all Trump voters. No. The Democratic Party, especially in California, and I am a Democrat for those who may not know, the Democratic Party in California especially is just as problematic as the GOP. And we saw that even with the whole Maxine Waters thing, not to digress.
So don't vote for Hillary Clinton and wind up with Trump and no abortions. You know,
I don't know what that means, but what I do understand...
I'm so sick of people complaining about the Democratic Party.
Right, it's not complaining, but the thing is
Hold on, we're taking this into... We're Meet the Hollywood... Press.
We're still Meet the Hollywood Press, and it is the reason why it is important. And I thank you for modeling the conversations we need to have, because typically we're not in the room to speak for ourselves. And white men and white women always feel that they're entitled not only to just like, okay, it should be, but they're entitled to our experiences and our stories and our lives, and you can just try them on and discard them when you're done, and we're done.
That's why I think a big part of this for me on a personal level was to have a deeper understanding, because there's always going to be a conversation. You know what? I'm going to, Sam, I feel like you're sitting over there. Your
like
head's going like back and forth.
No,
I just want to bring in, like sort of the millennial male opinion here. Like, because you're growing up in a generation that is really like throws out any labels. You know what I'm saying? And so what is your just opinion just looking at this as like the new generation of all of this?
Well, I think it's interesting. I don't think as the... You know, millennial voice at the table.
You like how I totally called that out.
I don't think we throw out labels, actually. I think we acknowledge them. We acknowledge the role that these labels play. And it's funny because there is kind of this this contradiction that always gets pointed out about millennials. It's like, oh, we're simultaneously, you know, so wedded to these labels, and, you know, we compartmentalize people into sexual orientation or gender or, you know, political affiliation, but at the same time, we throw it out and we dismiss it. And I think that confusion is kind of emblematic of, it stems from the contradiction that millennials themselves, you know, speaking generally, are trying to call out, which is that we do live in, or just any society operates on generalizations, and
yeah.
and we'll you know, I'm going to see someone and identify, you know, kind of a the list of identities that they represent, and then I'm going to treat them a certain way, right? So I'm kind of getting in the bushes, but I speaking to friends of mine and sources and especially younger actors, there's a split. Especially around this issue where, you know, a lot of actors come up. I mean, acting's about transformation, right?
Yeah.
I did college theater. I've played, you know, 60-year-old men, right? I am not a 60-year-old man. But, and that's kind of inherent to acting, but the issue is that same kind of opportunity for transformation is denied to trans actors, where trans lives and trans experiences are only celebrated in the context of these cis actors playing these roles, right? Where in a lot of, like, Jeffrey Tambor, we celebrated
him. And by
him.
The way, for the audience listening that may not know cisgender, because quite frankly,
right.
there's very smart people that I speak to that have heard that term for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And cisgender is a heterosexual...
Well, no, that's sexuality. That's actually separate. So basically, cisgender just means that the gender you identify as is in alignment with the sex you were assigned at birth.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So
there you go.
With Jeffrey Tambor, right? We celebrated him when he first played.
He won a million Emmys.
Exactly. He was lauded widely.
He did a great job. I mean, for whatever his
But which is also interesting because I, like, again, Netflix and Amazon, we don't really know, like, viewership numbers, but we just know that, again, the Hollywood's, like, self-congratulatory mm-hmm. award
yeah.
show.
Well, it even
like,
happened
the critics
with
and the writers all love...
yeah.
I don't actually
yeah.
know if America loves trans... Call me crazy here, but I don't know that the rest of America loves trans.
No, that's important.
Because
no.
Amazon doesn't tell us how many people watch it, and
yeah.
we don't know. So to hear 86% don't know trans... And then when you look at Ryan Murphy's Pose...
Yes.
Great show, but
mm-hmm.
here's the thing. The reality is it's even less than Versace. It's drawing 600,000 viewers a week. Granted, it's the summer of Versace. Versace was like about a million average. So my thing about this is, again, this is the answer. Hollywood studios, like, then what do you say when it's like, I feel like there's a certain level where people want Hollywood to be everything to everybody, where
yes,
it's like,
I agree with
Hollywood
that.
Gets involved in politics, and then it's like, Hollywood should shut their mouth about politics. Then when Hollywood is just
but
like...
But who says that?
No.
Who says Hollywood should shut their mouth, though?
Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Exactly, but there's, like, average, like, people...
Meanwhile, he's the most Hollywood of anyone who ever...
there's a,
right. That's the
there's
thing,
a lot
yeah.
of, like, no,
yeah.
I'm going to put this on, like, Trump, tending to be Trump voter type people think Hollywood... They've tuned out of watching, like, Hollywood Awards this last
oh,
year.
They totally
because,
have.
But then, when it comes to sort of, like... there's a social justice issue, and it's like when Hollywood wants to just be a business, like a studio goes like this, because here's what I'm going to say. What if, here's the thing, putting Scarlett Johansson in a role like this...
By the way, she's a fan, and I'm not defending any of this.
Yeah.
She is the biggest earning box office female in the business, bigger than Meryl Streep.
Yeah, so putting a highly visible actress in this trans role, then what do you say to people? Say, but that gives visibility to a trans story because more people are going to maybe
see the
movie.
Let me break it down for you. This idea of representation without compensation is exploitation rebranded. It's trash. It's
yeah.
not... That's why when we were talking about the Whitney Houston movie, I
yeah.
asked specifically, and I didn't move away from that, who is it benefiting?
Yeah.
And if it is not benefiting the people whose narratives and pain and trauma you're digging up for an Oscar that you're not gonna get, because let me be quite clear. If you notice, when they named all of those people who played trans roles... They were only award winners.
Why?
And there were other people who played trans roles that were not named. So even the arrogance in that statement
yeah.
said that, yeah, we're just doing whatever we need to do to get an Oscar. And again, my idea was not to get off in the weeds too much. What I really wanted to underscore more than anything is that the gaslighting needs to
mm-hmm.
stop. And so we need to stop, because if you're an artist and a storyteller and a director, producer, you are a reflection of truth. You are a reflection of the times. And if you are not able to reflect the discrimination and erasure and exclusion of trans people, you aren't that great at what you do.
A lot of art, and I'm talking about fine art, but also film, television, particularly now, is ugly, is mean. A lot of people hated Westworld because it's so violent. I say...
I don't hate Westworld, but I just think you need a map to understand
it. But art for art's sake. I do think there should be some socially conscious art, and particularly when it comes to documentary, because that's reality. But artists can do whatever they want, and artists can make something that's ugly. They love controversy, and I don't think they're responsible to anybody, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and that's, of course, because your life experience looks a lot different from someone who is not going to live to 35.
You don't know that. You don't know what my experience is.
I don't know your whole experience, but I know that next to me, it looks a whole lot different. And that's the gaslighting that we're talking about. But the fact that you are not, as a white woman, you are not able to sit here and acknowledge that you have privilege beyond other people.
Baby, I'm making no money. No one's saying, broke right now.
That's the other thing, too. When we're talking about white privilege, we're not talking about a bank receipt. When we're talking about white privilege, what we're saying is that you were born into the world with a head start and an advantage that several classes of people did not have. That does not make you a horrible person. It gives you an opportunity to take those tools and use them to become a better ally to communities who can use that.
And you know what? I would go out and defend any trans candidate, anything in politics. I just think artists should do what they want.
Yeah.
I don't think it's political.
Agreed.
I don't think art,
I think that's
political.
Why I want to have this conversation, because it's like I really literally see, I can honestly say I see both sides of the argument. There's this person in me that has worked in Hollywood and understands that it is still a business. And then there's the person in me that wants to stand up for social justice issues and have everybody have
Jeff
an opportunity.
Jeff Sessions,
you know,
also
worked
in politics for a very long time.
Yeah.
Does that mean that all of Jeff Sessions' politics are socially correct? No, it doesn't. No. So when we start looking at that, then that's when we kind of get into this thing of, to your point about millennialism, like, we can acknowledge it, and it doesn't mean that we're saying it's right or wrong. We're saying that we can do better.
But don't you think the controversy, like, the backlash is misdirected, because it's directed at an actress that's simply taking a role to do her job, right? And it's, and rather, listen.
America loves protecting white women. No. She has a role.
It has nothing to do with color.
It does.
Bear with me for a second here. This lies in, like, Hollywood starts where it's agents, managers that are going to rep people. So you're saying you're not getting in the rooms.
He had something to say, so like, I don't want to take up.
Oh, no. I mean, I have a lot of things to say.
We're basically not even going to get to the other topics, but that's okay, because this is an important conversation to have.
I'm not sure where to start. I mean, well, first of all, she's not... her career, her livelihood does not depend on taking this job. She could have any role she wants, especially if she's making as much as you
$100 million net worth. Yes,
exactly. She's doing totally fine for herself.
Though more money than Meryl Streep when it comes to box office.
But I don't think it's about money. Like, here's the thing. But she does probably want to be nominated for an Oscar. Like, we can actually say
and
that.
And that's the thing. Yeah.
It's
this life.
People want to. That's an accomplishment. That every actor in Hollywood that achieves box office success. What do they want next? Tom Cruise probably lays awake at night. Yes. He still hasn't got that Oscar.
And is him? You know,
he's not getting. Permission Impossible.
No, definitely not.
And so, you know, and what I respect about you, and I wish more of Hollywood had this conversation, you've made it very clear that it's about the money, and
it's not about the
profit, and it's not about the people.
I didn't make
and
the
so
rules.
I'm not saying that you're saying any. I'm just letting you know what I read back is that it's about the profit and not the people. So what we're saying is that Hollywood thinks just like you, and that's real. But the thing is that
Hollywood thinks. Do not say that to me. I really don't like that.
What is this happening right now? Uh-oh, this is getting a little bit too
late. You're making a lot of points about
She's just saying that Hollywood in general is a business. Yeah, and
I didn't create that rule.
She's not saying you did.
She's expressing that she's saying that this is how Hollywood is a business, basically.
Right, that was what I said.
No, but you're putting it on her like...
No, I'm not.
You're saying that you were talking about the industry
this
as a whole,
what,
not
and
you
this is what people do. And let's just keep this all the way real. We always want to attack the trope, and we want to make this about like, oh, I'm being attacked. You're not being attacked. All I'm doing is stating what you said. And whenever we tell the truth that way and come with facts, we're always demonized and villainized. So like I said, Hollywood has this idea that it is about the profit and it is a business. You're absolutely right. Allow me to agree with you. You're right. What we're just saying is stop pretending that you aren't exploiting these communities for their stories and giving them nothing from it. That's all I'm saying. And I didn't say that was you. That is an industry that was there before you were born.
Yeah. And actually, you earlier said, Joseph, that you know, that Hollywood kind of everyone says Hollywood is everything and or something along those lines.
That they want it to be everyone to everything, but then it's like sometimes I'm not defend. There's a lot of bullshit in Hollywood.
Hold on.
I'm not defend, but I'm saying that they also can't win sometimes. Like Hollywood literally can't win.
This is the thing. Hollywood is not the victim here. Hollywood perpetuate. You know, Hollywood wants to have it both ways, and I know I'm also aware that you know Hollywood isn't a monolith, right? Hollywood.
No, it's like it's not, yeah, exactly.
Who are smart and you know really attentive to kind of
Hollywood is the place that gives the Ryan Murphys and Shonda Rhimes the platforms to tell the stories that have groundbroken and done what we're talking about
exactly.
here. But go ahead.
But I mean, as long as we're you know kind of talking about generalizations, Hollywood is also a white hetero cis world still, right? And so you have this culture that's you know despite the fact that a lot of people are well meaning and being white and heterosexual and cisgender doesn't mean you can't be well-meaning and an ally, right?
Yeah.
But you definitely come, you know, you don't have a lived experience. That kind of prejudice or that lack of knowledge prejudices you in a certain direction, whether or not you mean to be prejudiced in that direction. But, so I'm kind of getting off topic. My point in all this is that...
Bring it back in.
Yeah, let me see if I can bring it home. My point in all this is that Hollywood is liberal when convenient. All too often, right? I mean, you see that.
That's another topic.
But it's
show.
Not. It's but not it's because not. we're talking about.
No, because
you know,
I don't think it's so
Hollywood
liberal.
Can be
Guess
everything
what?
To
it's
everyone,
not. But
they pick and
Hollywood's
they...
not going to be like they're gonna. They vote. Some of them vote with their pocketbooks. Yeah, there's tons of people that are Republican in Hollywood, but they're not gonna. That's not cool to be.
But
you know,
I'm not even talking about. I mean.
Because you're saying it's liberal when it wants to be. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
every 4 years for the elections, of course.
Sure. But also, I mean, when we're talking about, like, Black Panther, right? When they can make money, then, oh, my God.
They were going to make money when they made it.
Oh, they had night. I mean, they spent so much money on it. They didn't know
that
they were going to make ads.
I don't think it had anything to do with the marketing on it. That film, like, here's the thing. I hate, anyone who knows the history of me on Twitter, I hate superhero movies. You can't get me to sit in a theater for a superhero movie. I went and saw Black Panther 3 times because it was a great movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was like... I don't think they were like, oh God, we're
Do
Black
you know
Panther
why that was a great
money.
Movie? Let me go ahead and share that with you as the Black person on the panel. The reason why that was a good movie is because there were Black writers, producer, people. It was Black. It was for us, by us.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about Ryan
it's for
Murphy.
Everyone.
It was, but let's just be real. Let's just go ahead. It feels good to see yourself represented in a way in which you're not, like even with the trans story, you pick someone that is running like an underground prostitution ring and, oh, but they're giving you visibility, but what are they promoting? What message are they promoting? And so Ryan Murphy, Stephen Canals is the actual one who wrote it. He's the creator and co-creator, co-executive producer. And Ryan Murphy, though his name is on it, he has been intentional about bringing Janet Mock, bringing in Stephen Canals, bringing in all of these amazing, the cast of all trans women.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where we get to see that there is so much of a larger opportunity when we're intentional behind being inclusive. So Hollywood is where Hollywood needs to be right now. I'm so happy that we're in this generation where we can just start exploring it because we can't heal what we don't reveal.
Any final thoughts?
About?
The Scarlet... that we didn't cover in the last...
Scarlett, if you want to talk to us, girl, we're down to have a conversation. To be honest with you, the response that we got via your rep was what threw people, just so we're clear about what the real issue is, though we went in the weeds. It is about the fact that we felt dismissed. And if you're telling our story, you should be consulting with the community that you're claiming to represent and not speaking over them.
So I guess now would be a great time to move on to Zac Efron's dreads and cultural appropriation.
Lighter topic.
Oh my God. Actually, we had a great show prepared and we took up pretty much all of our 42 minutes on a very important conversation. We should say congratulations, though, to Justin Bieber to end this on a, like, maybe lighter, happier note.
Oh, yeah.
He got engaged to Hailey Baldwin right before the show, a couple hours before the show broke.
Publicity stunt.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
Well, yeah. Is there any thoughts about this? Because what I found to be interesting, I don't know if you guys are caught up, because I doubt we're all reading about Justin Bieber minute to minute, but... Ariana Grande had just had like a quickie engagement where she got engaged very fast to Pete Davidson, and there was a lot of people saying, you know, saying, "Oh my God, she just met her." Well, the same thing where I guess someone online had taken a shot at Scooter Braun, who is the shared manager, who I absolutely love, Scooter Braun. I think he's genius,
but he's like one of the smartest guys, and he has instrumented so much.
So many. So they're taking shots at him to basically say, "Oh, first Ariana, and now like meaning like that he's not like that." They're irresponsible, and so
then
Ariana came to
press.
His defense. Yeah, they got more press. But I think what people don't realize, Hailey Baldwin and Justin Bieber hadn't been like publicly like involved, but they had like there's been like an on and off thing with them for a long time. And I guess I'm just sick of like all the people on like the Twitter trolls online thinking that we all have the right to weigh in on when people should be engaged, when they should, like, who cares? Like, congratulations, Justin Bieber. Congratulations, Hailey Baldwin. And if you got together in a week, that's your business. I'm like so over
it. The internet makes it that it's
the internet just
business.
Makes every, yeah, that's the good way of saying it. The internet makes everything our business. And it's like, it's
don't
actually
read it.
Not.
Don't read it.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
No. Congratulations. I just say love is love is love, however you get it and whatever time, length, or pay. Just love who you want to love. Like, I'm not that invested.
I'm just really excited to see Justin Bieber walk down the aisle in sweatpants and, like, shower slippers.
Well,
I couldn't give a fuck.
Well, thank you for watching this episode of Meet the Hollywood Press. Come back next week where we'll have three new faces in the chairs. I'm also going to be on tomorrow morning, Conversations with Maria Menounos on SiriusXM, talking about Meet the Hollywood Press and what we've got coming for you and some other Hollywood topics. So catch us on Sirius at 10 a.m. tomorrow. And find Meet the Hollywood Press on podcasts, Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and on AfterBuzzTV.com. Thanks for watching.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.